Good evening, and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, August 13th, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Three challengers to Governor Brad Little in this year's election are against his memorandum of understanding with the Department of Energy that was inked without any public input to accept more toxic nuclear waste at Idaho National Labs, located above the Snake River Plain Aquifer. Natural areas along the Spokane River may take years to recover from Spokane Complex wildfires. And Bison Recovery Group, American Prairie's, sues Interior Department for revoking Montana bison grazing leases on BLM land. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Three candidates challenging incumbent Republican Governor Brad Little in this year's election say they are opposed to Governor Little's decision to sign a memorandum of understanding with the U.S. Department of Energy to allow federal nuclear waste into the state for underground storage at Idaho National Laboratory near Idaho Falls. There was no public input process or announcement when Little signed the memorandum of understanding July 24th. Little and federal officials then announced Idaho is one of five states the Energy Department is considering for new nuclear life cycle innovation campuses. The Idaho Capital Sun reports the federal government plans to choose three of the five states. Little's Democratic challenger, Terry Pickens, said she wants to protect the Eastern Snake River Plain Aquifer from nuclear contamination. She's concerned that officials are not considering seismic activity in eastern Idaho, in counties that surround INL, and she believes the memorandum violates the 1995 settlement agreement former Governor Phil Batt signed that prevents the federal government from moving most nuclear waste into the state before the department digs up and removes what's already there. If elected, Pickens said she will withdraw the memorandum of understanding, which is not legally binding. She told the Idaho Capital Sun, "I will take Idaho off the table as a consideration for the innovation campuses. We made an agreement that Idaho is not a place for the waste because of the unique characteristics of our geology and the aquifer, and for them to just simply disregard it tells me that Brad Little is making side deals with the Trump administration without transparency and without any consideration for what the general public might think about this issue." Independent John Stegner, who is also challenging Little in this year's election, said the agreement signed by Governor Batt in 1995 has strict requirements for accepting more nuclear waste. He said Governor Little has essentially volunteered all of Idaho for explosive growth in nuclear waste to solve a federal problem. Stegner, who is a former Idaho Supreme Court justice, said the United States is currently storing more than 95,000 metric tons of spent nuclear fuel across the country. By comparison, the 1995 settlement agreement limits Idaho to 55 metric tons of spent fuel over 40 years. What is being discussed for potential national campuses is not an incremental change. It is a fundamentally different scale of activity. The reason we have that agreement in the first place is because of broken promises and broken commitments from the federal government. Idaho had to sue to keep from becoming the dumping ground for the country's spent fuel. And the federal government is still behind on what it committed to us then. Brad Little has either forgotten that, or he has more trust in the federal government than I do. The Constitution Party candidate for governor is a man who has legally changed his name to Pro-Life. Pro-Life said, "I am totally against all of it. If I was governor, I would veto everything, just stall and do everything I could to prevent it from moving forward. I don't think we should say we are going to store the waste, even temporarily, for any reason. I don't care how much money we're going to get or how many jobs it's going to bring or lose to Eastern Idaho. I think it's just the dumbest thing we could ever do. The natural area along the Little Spokane River, which is part of Riverside State Park north of Spokane, will take years to recover from the Autumn Lane Fire, one of three fires in and near Spokane that spread due to high winds August 1st. The Autumn Lane Fire burned 5,781 acres and is currently 89% contained. It has burned a number of homes and buildings. Although the Indian Painted Rocks natural area has burned before, Riverside State Park spokesperson Rex Schultz said previous fires were not as large or as destructive to vegetation. The spokesman review reports the Indian Painted Rocks, which Native people painted centuries ago, survived the fire, but the landscape around the pictographs is covered with ash several inches deep, and trees there have burn scars. Spokane tribal member and local historian Warren Saylor says the pictographs made with crushed red rock and animal fats may show images of hunting, records of intertribal gatherings, or spiritual and religious iconography. In other Spokane fire news, the Spokane School District and the Meade School District have declared states of emergency, which are expected to speed recovery efforts. The emergency declarations allow district staff to request waivers from the State Superintendent of Public Instruction's office and other state agencies and enter into contracts to pay for recovery and cleanup of the schools. Meade Superintendent Travis Hansen told the spokesman review none of the school district's buildings had structural damage from the fires, but smoke and ash are in some of the school buildings. Spokane Public Schools spokesperson Ryan Lancaster said workers are conducting environmental tests on the schools that were near the fires, and preliminary results indicated they're in good shape. Classes are scheduled to start in both districts on Wednesday, August 26th. Meanwhile, the Spokane River has run dry for a second year in a row. Last year was the first year on record the Spokane River has run dry, and this year it happened earlier. June Schultz with Spokane Riverkeeper says a 1.5-mile stretch of the river is essentially dry. The stretch runs from Barker Road downstream to Sullivan Road, where aquifer water again flows into the river. Schultz said, "We didn't expect this to happen last year, and although we are ready for it to happen this year, it's happening much earlier. This is an unexpected, very quickly evolving event that we're trying to understand." The first reports this year of the Spokane River water disappearing came in on Sunday. And you're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Love's Kombucha is proud to support KRFP Radio Free Moscow. Love's Kombucha is a fun, lively, fermented probiotic tea that is craft brewed right here in Moscow. For more information, visit loveskombucha.com.
Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by the Moscow Food Co-op, established in 1973. The Moscow Food Co-op is a cooperatively owned grocery store that serves as a community hub and champions healthy, local, inclusive, and sustainable food and goods.
Washington State is investing millions in grants to help workers level up through its job skills program, and demand for the funding this cycle was the highest in the program's 40-year history. Awarded by the Washington State Board for Community and Technical Colleges, the grants match dollar for dollar with employers to provide customized short-term training for employees provided by the state's community and technical colleges. Carolyn McKinnon with SBCTC says this funding cycle drew a record 52 two applications.
Employee turnover is very expensive for any employer. They want to keep and grow their good employees. Those employers are also facing a lot of competition and new regulations, and so it's to their benefit to continuously train their workers.
McKinnon adds that SBCTC was able to fund 35 of the proposals, amounting to nearly $8 million in matching grants. She says companies focused on manufacturing are the most frequent applicants. Brittany Maruska is with Skagit Valley College, which is providing training through the job skills program to a handful of businesses this year. One of them is Goodwin's Composites, a family-owned manufacturing company investing in leadership training for their entire workforce. Another is a local animal feed producer focused on enterprise resource planning. She says the job skills program allows schools to better serve their students and partner with businesses.
Washington State Community Colleges are uniquely positioned to serve as the bridge between industry and education, and we're constantly working to understand workforce needs and to build partnerships with our employers.
Maruska adds, while the program helps employers, advancing skills also sets workers up to earn higher wages. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
The conservation group American Prairie has filed a lawsuit against the Trump Interior Department for revoking its bison grazing leases on Bureau of Land Management parcels in Montana. American Prairie has grazed a herd of 900 bison on 60,000 acres of federal land for more than 20 years. The Bureau of Land Management canceled the 6 permits because they are now interpreting the federal Taylor Grazing Act to require livestock to be, quote, production-oriented, unquote, in order to use federal land. That interpretation seems to ban grazing that helps ecosystems heal from nearly a century of abuse as European Americans killed off the nation's bison herds. American Prairie CEO Allison Fox told the Daily Montanan, "For more than 20 years, we've demonstrated that bison can be responsibly managed on public lands while improving the health of Montana's prairie. Our record is clear. This case isn't about whether we've been good stewards. We have. It's about whether the federal government can abandon decades of settled law and change the rules to reach a different political outcome." The BLM says American Prairie has until September 30th to remove their bison from federal lands. American Prairie filed their lawsuit on August 4th and is seeking a temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction against the grazing permit revocations. Western Watersheds Project Executive Director Eric Mulvar wrote in a statement, "The Trump administration is kicking our national mammal off of public lands and trying to replace bison, an ecological keystone of prairie ecosystems, with cattle, which causes a huge amount of ecological damage." Montana Governor Greg Gianforte and the state's extreme right congressional delegation asked the Trump administration to reconsider bison leasing rules. The politicians claim American Prairie is taking land that could be used for agricultural production, but American Prairie notes they lease much of their own private land to cattle producers. American Prairie has already won a preliminary injunction against the Montana Land Board for its new policy blocking the Montana Department of Natural Resources from approving any new or pending grazing permits for bison. The organization's lawsuit against the federal government says the Bureau of Land Management's new interpretation of the Taylor Grazing Act unlawfully created qualifications for grazing applicants not found in the statute's text. Therefore, the agency's statutory interpretation is arbitrary, capricious, and abuse of its discretion, and otherwise not in accordance with the law. The lawsuit also says American Prairie may have to cull at least 300 bison from its herd to comply with the Bureau of Land Management's new interpretation of the Taylor Grazing Act. It says the about-face policy change hurts their ability to plan for future herd management and interrupted business contracts. The lawsuit notes the BLM granted them 5 new grazing permits in 2022 and renewed 2 existing grazing contracts that year. It says the agency conducted scoping and completed a 180-page environmental analysis of the new and existing leases. American Prairie says its bison herd has produced 75,000 pounds of bison meat for public consumption and contributes hundreds of bison to tribal food sovereignty groups. The lawsuit says BLM arbitrarily invented a production qualification for grazing permittees, requiring the agency to probe applicants' intent and business model. And BLM did not provide a reasoned explanation for its determination that American Prairie's conservation mission and public messaging disqualified it from grazing its animals on public land. You're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman.
A new report warns federal deregulation of nuclear safety standards could undermine Hanford nuclear site cleanup efforts. The nearly 600-square-mile site along the Columbia River holds highly radioactive waste from nuclear arms production that spanned from World War II until 1989. Simone Antar is with Columbia Riverkeeper, the group behind the report. She says it looks at how removing safety and environmental standards will impact cleanup at the most contaminated site in the Western Hemisphere, as the Trump administration pushes to build new small modular nuclear reactors there.
To say they're safe, it's a different type of nuclear, is simply not true. They create high-level nuclear waste, which is a huge problem at the Hanford nuclear site now. We don't know how to deal with our high-level nuclear waste.
The Trump administration says it's streamlining deployment of next-generation advanced reactors, largely to generate more electricity for data centers. It calls the effort a nuclear renaissance. Antar says the report focuses on an area near Richland, Washington, where plutonium production began, which is now being eyed for new reactors. She says a uranium plume is contaminating groundwater and reaching the Columbia River there. There's also severe pollution under the parking lot of the Columbia Generating Station, the Northwest's only operating nuclear plant. Antar says while there has been some progress in the cleanup, there's significant pollution and radioactivity that may be permanent.
This is some of these questions that our report asks. Can this type of nuclear waste ever be cleaned up? Do we need to be looking at the cleanup more as babysitting nuclear waste for the foreseeable future?
Antar adds the report is designed to be accessible whether people are new to the Hanford cleanup process or already familiar with it. She says it offers a roadmap of questions to guide conversations, perfect for teachers, students, or anyone curious about the site. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.com.
Wildfire officials say the Alpaua fire burning 9 miles west of Clarkston along U.S. Highway 12 has burned more than 1,400 acres, and there are level 3 go-now evacuation orders in place. The fire continues to threaten 11 residences along West Lake Drive. As of yesterday, no homes had burned. According to the Lewiston Tribune, Northwest Incident Management Team 3 spokesperson Bethany Osgood said more help will come today. Osgood said, "We're here and we're tackling this fire with every resource we have to help the community." Osgood said around 50 firefighters are at the site and are concentrating on protecting homes in the area and outbuildings, putting out flames burning in grass and sagebrush as well. She said the Alpaua fire has zero containment, and the agency has 2 helicopters and 2 fire engines fighting the blaze. Many area residents have made the decision to stay home to keep sprinklers running to help protect their homes. 33-year-old resident of West Lake Drive, Doug Sherman, told the Lewiston Tribune, "He got just 2 hours of sleep after focusing on protecting his home and dragging firefighters' hoses most of the night." He said the fire crews were absolutely fabulous. They did everything you could ask for and more. Sherman said in 2002 a fire burned right to his front door, but the Alpaua fire was about 400 yards from his house. Sherman said the fire was much closer to his neighbor Don Dotson's home. Sherman described his night as a lot of sweating, and I even closed my eyes a couple times. We breathed a lot of smoke and dragged hoses all night. The air support was amazing. Assotin County Fire Chief Mole Hardin said he was on the scene for 24 hours straight. Assotin County Emergency Director Nick Bacon said he did get some sleep but returned to the fire. Bacon said, "We are asking residents to sign up for emergency alerts to help get evacuation notices and fire information out. We don't issue those notices just for fun. There is a real threat of danger if you get a level 3 notification. We are also asking boaters to avoid the Chief Timothy area to allow easy access to the water to fight the Alpawa fire." A 36-year-old Moscow man died at the hospital after a head-on collision on U.S. Highway 95 near Viola Saturday night around 8 p.m. A second person also died in another accident on U.S. Highway 95 near Riggins. According to the Daily News, the Moscow man succumbed to injuries after emergency responders transported him to the hospital. According to an Idaho State Patrol news release, the man was driving a Kia Rio north on U.S. Highway 95 near Viola when he collided with a 19-year-old woman driving a Honda Accord. Crews took the woman to the hospital for treatment. The news release said the Kia crossed left of center and collided head-on with the Honda. The report said it's unclear if the man was wearing a seatbelt. The woman was wearing a seatbelt. The State Patrol closed both lanes of U.S. Highway 95 intermittently for around 3 hours after the accident. The accident scene near Riggins, bystanders failed to extract a 74-year-old Riggins man whose 2016 Hyundai Tucson went off Highway 95 and into the Salmon River. The State Patrol reports the Hyundai was traveling north when it left the roadway and went into the river Friday evening. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Take a look at the weather. The National Weather Service has an air quality alert in effect for central and eastern Washington. It's continuing. Forecast for the Moscow Pullman area: partly cloudy tonight, low 49, sunny tomorrow, high 82, partly cloudy Friday night, low 48, mostly sunny, high 86 on Saturday, 30% chance of showers before midnight Saturday night, partly cloudy, low 50, and mostly sunny, high 87 on Sunday. Currently 79 degrees. Idaho Department of Environmental Quality real-time air monitoring shows at this hour the air quality in Moscow is moderate and the air quality in Lewiston is unhealthy for sensitive groups. For the rest of north-central Idaho and northern Idaho, the air quality is moderate and there's several good readings, Coeur d'Alene and points north. Washington Department of Ecology real-time air monitoring shows the air quality at this hour in Pullman is moderate. Air quality in Spokane is moderate. Air quality in Clarkston is unhealthy for sensitive groups. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online.